Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
This show is a proud member of the On Us All Podcast Network. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, sea monsters, fishermen, and athletes of all ages, we welcome you all to the wonderful world of Disney Pixar's Animation Studios. This is our second film in the made-up COVID era of Disney and Disney Pixar animation that we're going to be discussing. Today, we're going to be talking about the film Luca. And I am so excited for this. I am Joshua Knoll, local resident Diz nerd, here with the one and only one who makes podcasts possible, Pod Almighty TJ Tiberius Juan Blackwell. How's it going?
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. Halfway through the beginning, TJ said, "Let there be podcasts," and said it was all right. You just don't get that in the sequel to Genesis, you know?
Yeah.
But it's there.
Yeah, there's a book in between Genesis and Exodus. So.
Yeah.
Genesis-itis.
Yeah. Excited to get into this, but first, TJ, we got to talk a little bit about what we've been geeking out on lately. You want to mention anything to our dear listeners here?
Breaking Bad. Yeah. I started watching Breaking Bad, and it's just as good as everyone says it is. So
I still haven't seen it, so I have no commentary. Just assume a bad opinion in here, though. There was one.
Also, I've been ruminating on the fact that I should have gotten some wider rimmed glasses.
I mean, I think they look nice.
Yeah, but it's really easy to smudge them.
Oh, yeah, makes sense. I am geeking out still on Mass Effect. I underestimated how long it was going to take me to play through all these games, and I forgot a lot about these games because I'm old.
Yeah,
and now I'm just too invested.
Who did you choose? Ashley or Caden? Mass Effect 1.
I sent Ashley off.
Good.
She pissed me off. She made me so mad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's what I've been doing lately. Yeah, just really, really fast. Still watching like Scrubs and stuff too, but mostly just Mass Effect these days. For those listening, though, we appreciate that you took the time, instead of playing Mass Effect or watching Breaking Bad, that you took time to listen to our podcast. That means a lot. That's great. But you should still do those other things. But while you're listening, consider rating and review our show wherever you get your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever. It does help the algorithms think we're important so that other people find our show and we can keep doing this thing. So it's a free, easy, quick way to help and means a lot to us. Also means a lot that there are some people out there who are willing to throw money our way to help financially support our show. You guys are amazing today. We want to specifically shout out Daniel Sigmund. Thank you so much for supporting our show, Daniel. If you guys want your own shout out like Daniel, you can become an official member of Systematic Geekology using the website link that's in the show's description. Same website. You can also get free extra content. You can buy merch. You can leave a one-time financial gift. There's a lot of stuff you can do without becoming a member. So if you're not into the subscription thing, still go check out the website. There's plenty there that I think is well worth everyone's time. If nothing else, to look at it and be like, wow, Josh is bad at designing a website. That might be fun. And I mentioned before, this is going to be our second film we've covered in the COVID era of Disney animation. This is just some films that I feel like kind of got overlooked due to pandemic stuff related things. So we already did Onward. Today we're going to do Luca. I think next up is Raya, if I'm remembering right. And then we're going to go back to the golden era for one last round of a couple other movies to end out the series. So it's been a lot of fun doing this. Appreciate you guys' time. Those who've been following along from the beginning, you're the real OGs. Yeah. But today, jumping into Luca. Luca's an amazing film. It's just about some sea monsters who, when they're on land and they're dry, look like regular humans. And in a town where the humans are scared of sea monsters, want to kill the sea monsters. And a couple boys are kind of basically hiding out as humans because they want to see the world outside of what they've known. More or less. I think that's a fair beginning description. We'll get more into it here in a minute. But first, TJ, I want to hear some of what's your relationship with this film's like. When you first saw it, what some of your memories with characters? It's not super old film, so probably not done, but...
Yeah, this is... You know, one of the more recent ones. I mean, it's not even 5 years old yet. But I watched it a little while after it came out on Disney Plus. It's not something that's like been there for me, you know, like it is a really good movie, but it's not like formative in any way. Which is different than nostalgic. I don't know. I just think it's really good. It's not like one of the pillars of Pixar or anything to me. It is very overlooked. Mm-hmm. It's very overlooked. It's just a movie that I like to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're going to be a little different on this one because I do think this is going to be one of the pillars of Pixar. This to me is going to define where Pixar goes. We're going to talk about it a little bit later on, but I'm like, originally, this was just like a chill movie. Like it came out. I like the vibe. I like the music and everything. That, like the art is just soothing in a way. So it was a very good soothing film to just kind of have on. And I've always loved it. I watch it pretty regularly. This is another one of those that I just have on in the background when I'm editing podcasts or whatever. And the research for this episode, which has taken a couple weeks, surprisingly, because sicknesses and such, I've discovered that I don't just like this movie. I love it. And I'm thrilled by everything that went behind it because it gives me a lot of hope for where Pixar might go next. So, yeah, I think originally before doing my research, I probably would have rated this a little lower than Onward. That's not where I end up after I've studied stuff.
I don't know. I do still think Onward is better.
Onward's good
movie. But this, I mean... Craft-wise, I would say Luca's way up there.
If
they had to choose one, I would hope that they choose Luca as, like, this is what we're working towards.
Yeah, yeah. But we're going to get more into
Soul.
That.
I would choose Soul, but that's not what we're talking about.
Soul's good, too, though. But not what I want. Anyway, but I'm excited for this. It's interesting, though, when we talk about, like, how the film's been received so far. And this is where I'm, like... overlooked question mark. It is going to get its own attraction in Disneyland Paris. It has several attractions in some of the Disney cruises I'll mention a little bit later, but like, it's not like it's overlooked. It was the biggest animated streaming hit of the year. But even like right now, Hopper just came out and they're talking about how like this is Pixar's biggest film since Coco. And it's like, if you look at why they're saying that, they're talking about the box office. And I'm like, well, yeah, Onward and Luca both didn't have great box office numbers because Onward was only kind of in theaters and Luca didn't go to theater at all because pandemic. Of course, there wasn't box office hits, you know, like seems unfair to judge it off that criteria.
It's a bit unfair.
Yeah. But overall, streaming, it was a big hit. One of the things it's interesting that Onward kind of got hit from the conservatives of like, oh, that girl said she had a girlfriend. Luca, I didn't hear much retaliation in that way because there wasn't anything blatant. But then you had a lot of the progressives who praise it because it's like, oh, this is LGBTQ. Conservatives just seem to just act like that's not there or ignore it. Which
it's easy to do. Yeah, it's really easy to just look at it's like, yeah, that's just two kids. But there was a bunch of people when it came out. I was like, oh, look at them. They're so little and gay.
Yeah, like it took me a couple watches to see what they were even talking about. I'm like, they're not. What are you talking about? And then I was like, oh, OK, yeah. I see what they're talking about. It's just like that weird prepubescent age where it's like, even if you just like girls, it's like it's not the same, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're still kind of figuring out who they are. And it is a bit of a metaphor that can be interpreted different ways, which I think art's at its best when it's a little open to interpretation like that, you know?
I agree.
Yeah. So, TJ, could you summarize kind of the story, the plot, what happens in the movie Luca?
So, Luca is about Luca. Keep up. Complicated naming scheme Pixar's got going on. But Luca's a sea monster off the coast of Italy in the town Porto Rosso, which, like a lot of small towns, still is like heavy in its mythology. They still believe in sea monsters, which is good because they're real. He wants to just live. He wants to see what's on the surface. And he meets Alberto, who mostly lives on the surface, who's also a sea monster. So Alberto kind of leads Luca to the surface. He becomes human for the first time. And then they kind of get caught up. Well, Luca kind of gets caught up in Alberto's dream of going out in the world. And they do share that dream, but it kind of changes over time because this is a great movie with great characters.
Yeah.
And they meet that little girl, Julia. Yella. Julietta.
Oh, Julia. Yeah, you're right. Spelling's with a G that threw me off.
Yeah, it's the Italian version of Julia. But, and they get caught up in her dream, which is winning the, what is the race called?
Triathlon thing.
It's sort of a triathlon. It's not. It is three events, but one of them's eating pasta because it's Italy. It's sponsored by a pasta company. So they go for a swim, eat a bowl of pasta, and then bike up and down a hill. Big hill. And through it, Alberto and Luca kind of confront their issues, confront their dream, and bounce off of each other and off of the dream. And it's just, it's real good. It's a real good movie. It's heartwarming and heartbreaking at times. Mm-hmm. It's also got a lot of really good gags in it. Really good.
It really does. It's great.
Really good gags in it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I Luke feel like it's hard to summarize.
Sorry. They want a Vespa.
Yeah.
That's it. It's two boys who really want to buy a Vespa.
Yeah, bad summary. That would be the bad version. It's just two boys want a Vespa.
Two boys want a Vespa, and a girl wants to win a race.
Yeah, there was some like advertisement for Vespas that Alberto found that was like, they can get you anywhere in the world, and that's what he wants to do. So he's convinced that they have to have a Vespa. So him and Luca are trying to enter this race so they can get enough money to get a Vespa, and the girl wants to win for I don't remember what reason, honestly. Julia wants to win.
Be better than...
Oh, yeah, there's a jerk. His name is Jerk.
Yeah.
Hey, podcast fam. Want to stay even more connected with the show? We've got you covered. Check us out on Instagram and Blue Sky, where we're posting exclusive content and bonus videos and fun updates that you won't get anywhere else. From sneak previews of upcoming episodes to bonus content, our social accounts are the best way to keep the conversation going. Plus, it's a great spot for you to interact with other listeners and share your thoughts. We love hearing from you. When you follow us, it helps us grow and continue bringing you the content that you love. Whether it's a funny poll, a quick clip from today's episodes, or just random thoughts, you'll feel more plugged into everything we're doing. So go ahead and hit that follow button on Instagram and Blue Sky. It's one more way to be a part of the show and keep the good vibes flowing. Thanks for being a part of the family, and we can't wait to see you there.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers. Like, there's a lot of different motivations, I feel like. I mean, they have their main motivations, but then you also see where, like, I think Alberto and Luca form a friendship that's kind of around this whole, like, they just don't want to be constrained to their family. They, you know, they're trying to become their own person, coming of age kind of story. And then Julia has this, like, she loves the cosmos, the stars. She is little Will Rose. And Luca sees that and is like, wait a minute, stars are freaking cool. Tell me more about it. And he gets like sucked in. It's like, I want to go to school now. I want to do this too. This is awesome. And
and that's kind of what I was talking about. So like they do have this same dream, and then Luca's dream changes because what he really wanted was to know more about the world the whole time.
Yeah. Which
Alberto just wants to not be in Porto Rosso, where he was abandoned by his father.
Yeah. Like, I feel like Alberto wants to be needed. I think that's a lot of his thing. It's like he likes that Luca needs him to learn how to be a human, needs him to like do these things. Then when Luca starts going to Julia instead, he gets really jealous because like he feels like he's not wanted. He's not needed because his dad abandoned him. So then you get to like part of the crux of the film. They end up getting wet and everybody sees that they're actually sea monsters. And Julia's dad, Massimo, who is a known sea monster hunter, hates sea monsters. Like the whole town's ganging up about to kill Luca and Alberto because it turns out they're sea monsters. We got to kill them. And Massimo is this giant man of a man who speaks approximately as much as TJ and just goes, I know who they are. Calls them by name. Doesn't say these are my sons or anything like the cheesy normal Disney thing. He's just like, they are their own people. Like he sees them for them. And he stands up. And there's not a single person in that town who's willing to say he's wrong.
Yeah, he's huge.
Yeah.
He has one arm and it's really big.
He's just a massive human. Yeah. And like, I know we're going to get to this later too, but like, I can't like, so many Pixar's like we talked with Onward, like so much of it's like family related, like the dad died, this happened. Like that's usually the big emotional moment. For me in this film, the big emotional moment, Alberto, who we mentioned, abandoned by his dad, has a falling out with Luca because Luca now wants to be friends with Julia and Alberto can't handle that. So they have a whole falling out because of jealousy, whatever. And again, maybe it's also like a queer thing. We're not really sure. Could be romantic love in there a little bit. But anyway, Alberto feels abandoned again. I think rightfully so. But Luca went too far. But anyway, Massimo just finds out that Alberto's not there. He's on the run. He's going to make dinner for them all. And they're like, oh, well, without like no thought at all. He just immediately grabs the stuff and he's heading out. He's going to go find Alberto. Does not care at all. This is not his son, by the way. This is some kid that's a friend of his daughter's that he met like a week ago. He's like,
yeah, he does make him a lot of money, though.
That's true. But it was so fun. Like to me, the moment that like I tear up at, though, is Julia looks at her dad and goes, wait, he doesn't want to be found. And Massimo straight up goes, maybe not. Doesn't mean I can't try. And I'm like, well, I don't know, because like to me, that's like, you know, leaving the 99 for the one. That's like the God, like what I think of Jesus. Like that's it, man. Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah, maybe he doesn't want to be found. I'm going to go look anyway.
Doesn't mean I'm not going to find him.
Yeah, it wasn't like he was going to drag Alberto back home, but he's like, I'm going to at least let him know someone's looking for him. He's going to know somebody cares. And that, I don't know. I still tear up on that one. It's a good one.
Yeah, and there's a few moments in Luca that are like that. They're very poignant. Especially at the time, a lot of people were dealing with isolation. And I feel like Alberto was a much more relatable character for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Just because of the nature of the world at the time. But man, the 1-2 punch of Luca betraying Alberto and Massimo dedicating himself to Alberto. So good.
Yeah. Which I think also makes like the end of the film even more impactful, because like at the time you're like, oh, well, he's only doing that because he doesn't know Alberto's actually a sea monster. But then when it turns out they're revealed to be sea monsters, he's still the first one that's, I know who they are. And I can't like, I have to reiterate, like the fact that I love that he didn't go, these are my sons or something, like, you know, like the normal thing. He's like, this is Luca and Alberto. Because I think in a story that's like coming of age and then figuring out who they are in a world where like they feel, you know, Luca's been, his parents are kind of over controlling. He's been kind of like locked in that way. Alberto's been abandoned. Like they have their own journeys. And instead of being like, oh, these are mine, he's like, no, I see them as themselves. And then, oh no, that was huge. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
All right. 0 to 10, TJ. How are you going to rate Luca?
Probably 8. No. 8.5.
Mm-hmm. All right. And again, I have to like clarify for mine. I'm rating it against all Disney, all Pixar. So 5 is average for a Disney Pixar film. Anything above 5 is saying it is better than that. So with Onward, I gave it a 6 or 7. Originally, I was going to put this a little bit lower than that. I was thinking like 5-ish. After studying, seeing as much as I did, and really thinking more about the film, because for the most part, again, because it came out during COVID, I didn't see it in the theater. it's been more of a cozy film, but actually taking the time to watch it and really consume it, I'm put a little above Onward for me. So I'm going to put it at like a 7 or 8. So I'm going to give it like a 7.5. Maybe an 8. I really like this film. The more I watch it, the more I like it. It grows on you.
Yeah, like algae.
I don't know why I was really hoping you were going to say that, or barnacles. Yeah, good stuff. So actual art and animation stuff. You mentioned the gags earlier. You want to expound on that, any? Because I did like the gags.
There's just a few good ones. And not even just animation-wise, writing-wise, there's a few good ones. Massimo and Alberto are like out fishing. And Luca, mm-hmm. who's there for this part.
Yeah.
And, they're looking at his arm. He's just a huge man with one arm. And they're like, oh, how'd that happen? And it's like building the tension. And you're like, okay, here it is. They're going to say it was a sea monster. And he's like, I was born this way.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Born without it. At the end of the movie, the actual climax of the movie, Luca's parents come to the surface to look for him. And it's raining. It's bad. Luca and Alberto are both exposed at this point, and here come Luca's parents. Now, there's 4 sea monsters in the middle of the town, and Massimo's kind of protecting them. Not physically, but,
Yeah.
And then once the town is just like, all right, I guess sea monsters are people now, the 2 crotchety old ladies that just kind of wander around town take their hoods off, and they're also sea monsters.
Yeah, which I think does add more credence to the whole, this is a metaphor for, like, queer affirming stuff, because it's like that was definitely a thing. Those 2 old ladies you knew that were like really good friends a lot of the time, that was a thing.
And Luca's grandma throughout the movie is just kind of like, yeah, I've been to the surface, I love it up there. And then at the end of the movie, she just kind of shows up to eat dinner.
Yeah.
Like, grandma, what are you doing here? She's like, I come up here sometimes.
Yeah, no biggie.
It's no big deal.
Yeah.
Well, it's no big deal.
The animation gags, I obviously love. I've talked about this before with early Disney, how I really want them to get back to this kind of stuff. Because, like, to me, that's what makes animation so much fun, is you could just do silly gags and, like, fun stuff like that. And the director of this film very much agreed with me. And he took a lot of inspiration from some of the Looney Tunes creators. And 2 of my favorite moments like this is whenever Luca's first trying to learn how to be like stand upright as a human, and he's flopping like a fish out of water. It's like, that was great. And then there's a kind of a bike accident crash thing with Alberto. Instead of having birds around his head, he had fish. I'm like, that's great. I just love little animation gags. Just bring me joy.
I do also love Alberto's interpretation of the stars, not because it's a gag, just because it calls to like just like in folklore, indigenous folklore. And he's like, oh, those are little fish. Those are fish in the sky.
Yeah, why wouldn't they be?
Yeah. Like the Aboriginal myth for stars is also connected to the first didgeridoo.
Nice.
Fun fact, this is a cool story. I don't know it in its entirety. Yeah, it's over there.
Yeah.
I don't remember their names. But a shaman blew the termites out of a termite infested log, and they flew up to the sky and became the stars, and the log became the first didgeridoo.
Nice. I believe that. That sounds like a true story.
Yeah, that's what they are.
Yeah. Yeah. Other cool medieval-ish things, though. The inspiration for, like, how they designed the sea monsters, like, actually came from, like, sketches from, like, Renaissance medieval Italian stuff, which is super cool. He took a lot of inspiration from Ghibli films and how they do their art, which, again, speaks to, like, the art of this film is just incredible.
Which is hard, because this is 3D animation.
Yeah.
And no good Ghibli movie is 3D.
True.
Not yet.
But... it was nominated for the Oscar for the best animated feature film. And so, I mentioned this with Onward, and a lot of my problem with like new Pixar stuff is like they just use the same style for different whatevers. It's like this highly detailed whatever stuff. This film just does not do that. It's just like we're going to do our own thing. So they pull from what's called painterly style when it comes to like paintings, where like instead of mixing the colors and then painting on the canvas, they would mix the colors on the canvas directly or layer the colors to kind of have like a mixing effect. So what they do with the CG in this film is they have the layers, especially like with the sea creatures, which makes a lot of sense for scales, and they painted on the colors, kind of like they would just digitally layer the colors instead of having it be highly stylized and detailed like they usually do for Pixar. I thought that was a brilliant choice, especially if you're going to do anything fish scales, like that just works so well. Some people, though, I have heard complain that the film, like the art looked too simple, but it's like, well, it's because they were just doing a different style. It wasn't actually less.
It does have like the bean mouth thing that a lot of people hate and I hate too. It's very samey. It's like they called it the CalArts style for a few years. And that changed pretty quick just because the CalArts style changed pretty quick. But it does it really well. If they all did it as well as Luca, it wouldn't be as big of a problem. But first impression, you're definitely like, oh, here we go.
Yeah. But the other really cool thing that they did, this is my last thing that I want to like nerdy animation stuff that I thought was cool. They created a transformation rig that was like the first of its kind of deal, where the entire film, what they did for the animation is the human character and the sea monster were layered on top of one another. So for any given scene, when something happened, like it started raining or whatever, they would apply the effect and basically the one layer would dissolve away so you could see the layer behind, which is what allows it to have such fluid transformations from one to the other throughout the movie. And it's incredible. Like when you see it, you're like, oh, it's just so well done. Like the ingenuity, the tech that went into this, like I love knowing that Pixar is still trying to do something new. Like they're not just doing the same old for everything. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah. It is also, I was rewatching the movie because I just don't watch it that often. I do like to watch it, but I was rewatching the movie and I was like, man, they sure are lucky that it doesn't rain in this small port town in Italy, like all the time. And then I was like, oh wait, no, it does. It will.
Yeah.
Which is forget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mentioned the director a few times. I'm going to mention him again because this is probably the person I'm most watching in all of animation right now. I am most excited for Enrico Casarosa. I might be saying that incorrectly, but I know when I see his name now, I've been paying a little bit of attention and studying what he did for this film, paying a lot more attention. Guy's incredible. He was a storyboard artist first for Disney shows like the 101 Dalmatian animated series, PB&J Otters, etc. Then he went on to do storyboarding for Ice Age and Robots.
Mm-hmm. Both great movies.
Yeah. And then he went on to do some of the art with Cars, Ratatouille, and Cars 2. Incredible guy. Then he directs a short film, La Luna, which was also nominated for the best animated short film. He keeps getting nominated, but I don't think he's won yet for like Oscars or anything. He was the head of story on Good Dinosaur. Don't think he had anything to do with the art there. Then he does this. That's, again, almost won the Oscar for best animated feature film. I think it probably should have, but it's fine. Next up, though, this is what had me really excited. So he really pushed for all the different art in this and not just doing the same old for Luca. It took him 5 years. At least they said 2 months was spent just on pasta. Because this is an Italian film. The movement of pasta has to be correct. He spent that long just making sure the movement of pasta was correct. Next up, he has a film called Gatto that's going to come out in 2027. Pixar's first 2D film. He's having it like not specifically hand-drawn. I think it's going to be drawn in digitally, but it's going to be 2D styled a lot more like the Ghibli films again. Black Cat in Italy, having to befriend the mob. I'm just so excited. This is going to be good.
Also, La Luna has a character. I love it when artists do this. Mm-hmm. La Luna has a character that's just like Massimo, but with two arms.
Yeah. And La Luna was great. I like that his short film did so good that they were like, well, maybe he should get his own film. And then Luca did so good for Disney Plus, like as a platform, that they're like, okay, Gatto, which will be his first full film that actually gets to have box office numbers. And so I'll be a little bit more proof of concept, I guess. And I hope that goes well. I really want people to show up for that film because maybe if we show them with our money that Disney and Pixar will start caring about art again and doing new things, and that'll make me happy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's also worked a lot with Mike Venturi, who helped on this film. Some of Mike's or Venturi's early stuff was Iron Giant and Osmosis Jones. Both great films. His first time as directing animator was for Ratatouille. And then he goes to this film. He's also helped with Monsters, Inc., Cars, Incredibles, Coco, Onward, Good Dinosaur. He's helped with a lot of films. But I think his two, like, that he's played biggest roles for was Ratatouille and this. I think there was a couple others, but those are the two that I was like, oh, animating director, and both of the animations for these are incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Man, so, I love Ratatouille. See, that's the real problem for me. Yeah. I can't compare every Pixar movie to Ratatouille.
Then they all suck because they're not Ratatouille.
Yeah. Then it's all like threes and fours and so maybe like a seven for Coco.
Coco's so good.
Hey guys, Christian here. Have you ever wondered how you can support Systematic Ecology? Well, we've made it a lot easier for you by going to Fourth Wall. Instead of what we've done in the past, Fourth Wall makes everything very easy for everyone involved. Everything is in the same spot. So if you want to find a way to become a member and get access to our exclusive memberships and all the giveaways that we're going to be doing, Fourth Wall is the way to go. As well, if you want to see all the extra episodes and content that we only put to our members, that's the best way to go. Feel free to rate and review us there. You can also leave a donation or tip if that's something you're interested in. And as well, you can help support our All Reading Counts initiative that we do. All the donations that go to that go to our libraries. You're also, if you really want to, it's like, man, I really want to hear more episodes about Christian for some reason. Or even, for even reasons I don't understand, you want to hear Joshua more often. We have episodes listed by host, and you can see everyone there. If you have a favorite host, head that way and support the episodes that they're on. You also find a link to our YouTube page. And we may be adding some special content beyond what we've promised. Everything that was once in multiple different locations and you didn't know where to go, well, it's all in that one convenient place. If you want to know exactly where to go, the link to this will be in the description below.
So if you had to pick a favorite scene, favorite character design from this movie, TJ, what would you go with?
Okay, so character design is probably Massimo.
Fair.
I love it. The big old sea, you know, seafarer. Sorry, I just didn't want to say seaman. Fisherman, big fisherman guy. He's got his harpoons. He's just wearing like the burlap shirt. He's awesome. I love it when just shows, movies, whatever, make a character whose eyebrows are just way too big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the, like, I do think the best example is probably Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Mm-hmm.
Right, where the dad just doesn't have eyes at all until he raises his eyebrows. That's so good. That's such a good gag. Yeah. Massimo is probably my favorite design. My favorite character is probably Luca. Maybe Julia. I do really like Julia's character.
Yeah.
She's almost like how I was when I was younger. Mm-hmm. But I did have friends.
That's not funny.
Not to pile on Julia. But
take that, kid.
Take that, loser. I don't know. I really like both characters, both motivations. Big fan. She's super cheesy. She's so focused on disabling the guys. Yeah. What does she call it? It's not despotic. His reign of injustice. Yeah. It's so funny.
It is pretty funny. Yeah. Favorite scene?
That's hard. That is hard.
It is.
It's really hard. Probably the very end of the movie. The very, very end of the movie where Luca's family and Massimo and Alberto team up to send Luca to school, human school.
Yeah.
It's so good.
It is.
It is so good. And they do it really well. I know a lot of people are watching this, and naturally you start thinking that, oh, well, Luca's in love with Julia. And they just remove Julia from the scene completely. She takes her exit a couple of minutes before the rest of the cast. But yeah, that probably is my favorite scene in the movie.
Yeah, no, it is good.
Also hilarious that Alberto's obsessed with getting a Vespa, and there's just a train station in this town. Like, even if it only goes to Genova, if you get to Genova, you can go somewhere else.
Yeah. Definitely further than you could get with a Vespa. Yeah. No, I, you know, I was going to choose the same scene. It was close for me, because I also do love when Luke is like, I'm going to win by myself for you, for Alberto, because Alberto pulls himself out of the race because he's like unwanted and whatever. And he's having an emotional moment. And Luke is like, fine, I'll win by myself. Yeah.
Yeah. Unhinged. No. That's the most unhinged thing that happens in the movie.
I love he jumps off the tower, but I love like he puts on the scuba diver suit so he doesn't get wet for the swimming portion. I love that because it's like, yeah, it is emotionally deep, but it's also just funny.
Yeah, but the tower, man, he just jumps off the top of this tower, and it's like 3, maybe 4 stories. Like, it's a pretty sizable tower for the time. There's no reason for that. There's like nothing that makes us think sea monsters like don't take fall damage. You know, he just jumps into a tree.
God, those are all incredible. Yeah, but I think I'm gonna stand with you. The best scene is the end, because like, Alberto has the money to get his Vespa. It's like, instead, I'm going to give the money to you. I convinced your parents even to let you go to human school, who don't like humans very much, you know.
Or Alberto.
Yeah. But somehow he convinced them that it was okay, gives the money that he was going to use for his dream Vespa thing. And then, too, like, I love the moment where he's like, well, I figure that, you know, Massimo needs me around here. Because it's like, again, that goes to Alberto's need to be needed. And it's like, oh. That was good. And it's because you also, Massimo definitely played a pretty big part in that somehow. Because he's like, yeah, I'm just going to raise this kid. It's fine. Yeah, good scene. As far as favorite character, I am going to go Massimo. I just love his, like, his whole life. He's like, oh, I'm going to kill a sea monster. Then as soon as he meets one, he's like, nope, that's a person. Care for that person.
Yeah, I mean, he did have to know them as humans, to be fair.
Yeah, but still. And then favorite character design. I'm actually going to go with Daniela, Luca's mom. Because, you know, as a sea creature.
No, that's true. That is true. No, you're so right.
Because she's criticizing the other person. She's criticizing dolphins. Like, why do they make noises like that? Whatever. And then as a human, somehow she kind of looks like a dolphin. And they even have the gag where she does the dolphin noise as a human.
Yeah, no, it's deeper than that. Forget Massimo. Screw him. Never even existed.
What?
Daniela's design is so much better than every other sea monster in this movie and every other person in this movie. So we talked about the bean mouth thing. I don't like it. I just don't. The design for the sea monsters in general, it's kind of childish, which is fine. It's a kid's movie. It's a very good kid's movie, but it's a kid's movie. Daniela's design is so much more sea monster-y. To me, even when she's not doing the gags, she just looks so much better. When I'm rewatching the movie, I'm like, I kind of wish Luca didn't look like that. I kind of wish Alberto didn't look like that. Then Daniela's on screen in her sea monster form. I was like, that's it. That's perfect. They give her like the elongated nose. Yeah. Her head's more narrow.
Yeah.
I like so her. Good.
Her design's great.
So also, his dad's kind of funny looking.
Yeah. Her brother, is it? That's the one that lives like way under sea.
His brother, his dad's brother.
That was up there for my favorite design, too, because that was funny. And the after credit scene with him. Amazing. You guys got to see that one.
Yeah. But if every sea monster looked like Daniela, I think this movie would have done a lot better, but it would not be as appealing to kids. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is also interesting. Maybe that says something about the philosophy. Of making this movie.
But I don't know. I love the art. I love that it looks more simple because the way they did it with the painterly and just kind of like layering the colors. I thought it was cool. But do got to move on here. I want to list some of the places you guys can find some of these characters elsewhere. If you're at the Pixar Pier in California Adventureland, you will see the characters doing meet and greets there, as well as Disneyland Pride Nights. They're pretty prevalent in that area. Disneyland Paris, I mentioned, is getting its own area. Then you have rooms aboard the Disney Treasure that have its rooms that are just Luca themed. And of course, another cruise that has a restaurant called the Taverna Poderosa that's aboard the Disney Adventure. And it's also Luca themed, and it looks so cool. So if you want to see more Luca, it is out there. I'm hopeful to see more. I don't want it overly done because, again, I think it was a really artistically well-made film. So I don't want it to be overly noveltized, if that makes sense. Gimmicked. I don't want to become a gimmick. Yeah. Last thing, though, when we're doing like the think deeper stuff, we talked about a lot about this stuff already, but I want to go to some of the Four Loves because I'm contractually obligated. So C.S. Lewis has a book called The Four Loves. And a lot of what he talks about, I see so clearly in this film. Like C.S. Lewis talks about need love and how we have a need to be needed. All of us have that. And it's different from want love, which both there's both aspects to every kind of our love. There's a romantic I want to be needed, a romantic I want to be wanted, etc. Shared truths. When he talks about friendships are somewhere sharing the truth. We share the truth that we want to go out and see the world. Then Luca meets Julia and they have the shared truth of like wanting to learn more about the stars and how friendship is jealous. C.S. Lewis writes a lot about that, of how like if TJ and I shared a truth about, well, we actually do One Piece and like our whole friendship's about this. This is so cool. We talk about One Piece all the time. Then all of a sudden I meet Christian Ashley and me and Christian, what's something me and Christian both like?
Nothing.
Spider-Man. And all of a sudden, I'm watching less One Piece, talking to TJ less, because I'm suddenly really into Spider-Man. I'm talking to Christian more. It's reasonable that TJ will get jealous. Like, that's just natural aspect of friendship love, although I don't think TJ would. But I think naturally, that's a lot of times how that works. And just kind of how I've seen that displayed here, and even how C.S. Lewis says friendship becomes toxic when it becomes about itself, because all the loves, when turned into a god, become a demon, is how C.S. Lewis words it. So with friendship, when you see that is like the friendship becomes about itself. Like me and TJ are friends and then we're talking about our own friendship and that's what the friendship becomes about. And then it becomes not really beneficial for anyone. And I think you start to see that happening to Alberto, where like more important to him than the Vespa or the journey was being friends with Luca. And that's where whenever Julia started showing up, Alberto just did not react very well. And I think that was a really good display. And C.S. Lewis's answer to that is all the loves have a fault, and that's why they have to answer to a greater love, which C.S. Lewis and myself will affirm is then agape, which is, you know, the divine love. I thought it was really interesting how the relationships were displayed here and just kind of overlaying that with C.S. Lewis's works. I don't know. I think it's a really good case study. TJ, as far as like just like relationships in this film go, do you think they're realistic, healthy, unhealthy? What are your thoughts on relationships?
I mean, I don't really remember being that young. My head don't work quite right all the time. So,
funny, because I remember you being that young, but I don't remember me being that young.
Yeah. So I assume it's pretty spot on. It's very believable. I absolutely believe that a 14-year-old mm-hmm. Would act the way that Luca and Alberto do. There's a couple of, I'd say, master strokes of character writing in Luca. Alberto is one, the way he's kind of reserved at first, he's closed off, he's not reserved. And then Luca has to work to get that out of him, and then jump off that tower. Freak. Massimo reconciling his entire worldview.
Yeah,
just because he happens to know a couple sea monsters and he likes them. It's real good.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a big truth there, too, of like it's easy to hate from a distance. But then once you get to know somebody, it gets harder.
Mm-hmm. It's the others. Sea monsters are the others.
Yeah.
To Porto Rosso. And when they become, you know, just themselves, the problem's gone.
Yeah. Which, again, that's why I think the metaphor works so well. It doesn't have to be about LGBTQ stuff, I think. It is pretty clear that that was part of the intent, but I think you can read that as like, I like D&D and everybody else thinks people who play D&D are devil worshippers or, you know, I'm this ethnicity. Like, I think it works on so many different levels. And that's why I think like, again, that's why I think art done well is able to do. And I think it's more healthy for families. You know, again, like Liz mentioned that with like the Onward thing of like, hey, this is an opportunity to talk to your kids about this thing. And I'm like, yeah, sure. I like how Luca does it, because then like if you don't want to talk to your kids about a thing, you don't have to go there, but it does allow you to be like, hey, what did you think about how Alberto was treated? Okay, cool. And then you could have these conversations about the art, and sure, maybe you go a different direction than like the queer stuff. That's fine. maybe you decide you do want to go there. So I like that Archer's kind of open interpretation. They do that really well here. And yeah, man, I love how they do relationships. Before we go, TJ, how important is friendship, and is friendship ever just toxic?
Friendship is magic.
Yeah, My Little Pony.
Yeah, friendship is pretty much everything in life, even with, you know, other types of relationships. You know, you can have a dad, or you can be friends with your dad. It's very different. It's also very hard for the dad, I've heard, to do both, because you still got to be a dad, but whatever. I think friendship, to me, is relationship, point blank, period. That's friendship is relationship. That's just me. That's just me. Yeah. I like to have friends.
Yeah.
You know, that view is mine. That is my worldview.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I mean, I think this film does show, like with Alberto, friendship can be toxic. But I'm going to go something C.S. Lewis said was that friendship is the closest of all human loves to the divine love. Because it's not like based on some physical thing or like, oh, I was born and thus we have to have family love, or, you know, I just suddenly fell head over heels over my wife and now we're, you know, friendship love is more of a choice, is more of like a participation. And that's why C.S. Lewis says it's closest to the divine love of all of our human loves. And I don't know if I agree, but I like the sentiment. There's definitely some truth there. I don't know if it's completely true.
Yeah. I don't know. All my friends are tall. I'm only friends with tall people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Coincidence, I'm sure.
Nobody likes short people. Oh.
No one likes short people.
All right. So let's go ahead.
You have a couple of short friends. Just not a lot. It really is. Like most of my really friends are though. Huge.
Well, you were meant to be tall, so that's why.
Yeah. If Josh was part of my like regular, like everyday friend group, he would be the fourth tallest person. You'd be the third shortest. What I'm trying to say.
If you were part of my regular friend group, you would still be the second tallest. Is that just because I keep a really small friend group? Yeah. But anyway, with that, let's go ahead and start wrapping this one up. Instead of an extra question, we're going to do a bonus segment reviewing Ciao Alberto. So they do a short film of that's kind of a sequel to this of what happens with Alberto and Massimo after the film. So if you want to hear some about that, we'll be talking about that here in a minute. First, though, we do have to give some recommendations. TJ, what are you recommending to people?
Nothing yet. I just wanted to let everyone know that Josh can't spell Ciao.
Thanks. Yeah.
You're welcome. I do recommend, if you just want some more of this world, Ciao Alberto. It's a fun little, it's like 7 minutes, just like a 7 minute follow up on here's how that went. I wish they had made one for Luca in human school.
I wish they will make one. I hope they still do.
They still could.
That would be cool. Yeah.
They still could. It's interesting that they only did one for Alberto, but.
Yeah, which. I don't know. I felt needed, but it also felt like it didn't fit the regular film. So I like how they did it.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that in a minute. For my recommendation, I'm having to look up the actual name of this. I'm recommending The Republic of Pirates. It's a building game where you just kind of build your own pirate armada and port and rum runners. And it's like the cheesy, not realistic at all pirates with like that kind of music. Like, if you just took Pirates of the Caribbean when it was originally made with all of the, like, campiness of it, I feel like that's what you get. It's great, though. I am having a lot of fun. It's very chill. With that, though, I do want everybody to consider rating and reviewing this show, wherever you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever. It does help the algorithms think we're important so other people can find our show. I want to thank our financial supporters today. We're specifically shouting out Daniel Sigmund. Daniel, you're amazing. If you guys want your own shout out like Dan, you can become an official member of Systematic Geekology on our website down, found in the links found down in the show's description. You can get your free content. You can buy some extra merch, leave a one-time gift, all kinds of other stuff on the same website without becoming a member. So if that's not your thing, consider looking at some of the merch and other stuff there. I think it's still worth your time. Again, this is our second film in the COVID era of Disney Pixar animation. So we got one more before we do a kind of an encore, a couple of other films in the series. So if you want to hear the whole series, the link for that also is in the show's description. I think it's been fun and worth your time. So remember, everybody, one last thing, that we're all a chosen people, a geekdom of priests.
Hey guys, Christian here to talk about our YouTube page. That's where you can go find us at youtube.com/@systematicgeekology. We have exclusive stuff there, exclusive videos where you can just hear other topics that you'll never hear on the podcast proper. These include things like comic book catch up, where we're discussing the newest comics that we're reading, Friday Night Frights, where Joe Day and I explore a cryptozoological, paranormal, ufological item of discussion. Has a lot of good fun there. Have a lot of great times with him. We have spontaneous YouTube shorts that we decided to do, a topic we wanted to discuss. They're in a very short form. We do them there as well. You can interact with us live as we're recording, like a What's New episode or something like that. You have something you want to chime in? Well, how can you do it unless you head over to youtube.com/@systematicgeekology. All right, guys, see ya.
This show is a proud member of the Onazal Podcast Network. Other shows on the network include Be Living Water, where Joshua Knoll discusses various topics from a Taoist Christian perspective, inviting listeners to imitate Christ and be water, beneficial to all, and a conflict with none. Friday Night Frights, Day and Christian Ashley discuss all things frightful, from UFOs to the paranormal to serial killers and more. Kung Fu Pizza Party, where Brandon discusses all things martial arts media, delivering high-flying action and wisdom, one slice at a time, all in under 30 minutes. And my other show with Christy Whaley, Theology on the Rocks, where two theology PhDs talk about our lives, the world, and theology, all over drinks, clearly. Come on over each week to hear two besties discuss academic nerd stuff while also banter endlessly, especially if wine is involved.